All right, we're back, ready for another deep dive. Last time we tackled Cabernet Sauvignon, and now, well, now it's time to get to know Merlot a little better.
Cabernet to Merlot. Nice. That's quite the red wine lineup you've got
And
going.
trying to round out my knowledge, you know. So tell me, when we talk about Merlot, who are the big names? And is it true what they say about Merlot not aging well?
Let's unpack that. Firstly, it might surprise you to know that Merlot was actually the fifth most planted grape worldwide back in 2010.
If. Wow. I knew it was popular, but not that popular.
It's a pretty dynamic world, the wine world. And back then, France was leading the pack in production, followed by Italy, the US, Chile, and Australia.
A real global citizen, this Merlot. But about that aging thing, is there any truth to it, or is that just a myth?
It's a bit of a misconception, actually. Some Merlots are meant to be enjoyed young, sure, but others, they can age beautifully. It really depends on a bunch of factors, like climate, the winemaking techniques, even the grape's DNA.
Oh, interesting. So how do you figure out a wine's aging potential?
Well, there's something called the Varietal Intensity Index, or a 7 for short.
So, okay, what's that all about?
You can think of it as a predictor of how long a wine can age gracefully. It takes into account the grape itself, where it's grown, how the winemaker made it, the whole shebang. And guess what? Some Merlots have a pretty high 7.
So a high Sauvignon is like a hidden gem, the kind of wine that just gets better with time.
Exactly. But like with most things in wine, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Regional variations play a big role in how a Merlot ages, just like they did with the Cabernet Sauvignon we talked about.
Ah, so different regions, different Merlots. Makes sense. Where should we start a little tasting tour then?
Well, no Merlot deep dive would be complete without a stop in France, right? Specifically, the right bank of Bordeaux.
Bordeaux, that's the name that comes to mind when you think of those fancy vineyards.
And for good reason. What often sets Bordeaux Merlot apart is the blending. Winemakers there often combine Merlot with Cabernet Franc, and it creates these wines that are known for their elegance and complexity.
So it's not just about the Merlot itself, but the blend and the place it's grown, the terroir.
You got it. It's a whole combination of things that makes Bordeaux so special. But we can't forget about Italy. They've got a long history with Merlot, too.
Oh, for sure. Italian wines are always a favorite. So, what's Merlot's role in Italy?
It's a bit of a multitasker, actually. It shines both on its own, as a single varietal wine, and as a key player in those famous Super Tuscan blends.
Super Tuscans. Aren't those the ones that kind of break the rules of traditional Italian winemaking?
That's the spirit. They often incorporate international grapes like Merlot, sometimes even making it the dominant grape. It shakes things up a bit.
So it's like Italian tradition meets a touch of global flair. Sounds pretty cool. But how does a Merlot in a Super Tuscan blend compare to a classic Bordeaux, like in terms of taste and aging?
That's where things get really interesting. Both styles can age beautifully, but they definitely have their own personalities. Italian Merlots tend to have a slightly more rustic character, vibrant acidity, earthy notes, a different kind of elegance compared to the polished style of Bordeaux.
So there's a whole spectrum of Merlot out there. It's like exploring different sides of the same grape.
Yeah.
What about the New World? I'm thinking California especially.
California is definitely a big player in Merlot production, no doubt. Places like Napa and Sonoma are making some really great wines, but you've got to remember that California has a lot of microclimates.
Oh, right. You've got those cool coastal areas and then those warmer inland valleys. Does that affect how California Merlot ages?
Absolutely. The warmer areas tend to produce riper, more fruit-forward Merlots that are delicious to drink young. Then you've got cooler regions like Washington State, where they can make Merlots with more structure and aging potential, more like what you'd find in Bordeaux.
So there's a California Merlot for everyone, basically. What about other New World spots? I know Chile has a reputation for making good value wines.
You're right on track. Chile is getting more and more known for its Merlot, and it's often very budget-friendly. Their climate and terroir are perfect for growing it, so they can make good wine without the hefty price tag.
This is making me realize just how versatile Merlot is. But we've talked a lot about regions and aging. What about the actual taste? What are the classic Merlot characteristics?
That's the best part, right? The actual experience of the wine. Well, Merlot usually has a deep ruby red color.
I can picture it. But what about the smell? What should I be getting when I swirl my glass?
Ah, the aromas. Think ripe plums, juicy black cherries, maybe a touch of dark chocolate. You might even get hints of cedar, especially if it's been aged in oak.
Okay, now I'm really craving a glass. But let's get to the most important part, the taste. What makes Merlot so enjoyable to drink?
Merlot is known for its smoothness. It has soft tannins, medium acidity, and a nice full-bodied texture.
So it's not too harsh or acidic, just a nice balanced taste.
Exactly. And that balance is what makes it so versatile for food pairings, too. It goes well with so many different things, from hearty meats to lighter dishes.
Like the Goldilocks of wines.
Yeah.
But before we get carried away, have we covered everything important about Merlot?
I think we've hit all the major points, the main producers, the truth about aging, all the different styles, and of course, what it actually tastes like.
This has been a fantastic deep dive so far. But before we move on, one last question popped into my mind.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
We know Merlot can age well, but it seems like there's a lot of variation depending on where it's from and how it's made. So, could learning more about the specific terroir and the winemaking choices help us predict how well a Merlot will age?
That's a really great question, and it deserves a closer look. Maybe we need to explore all those details, the soil, the climate, the winemaking techniques, to really crack the code of Merlot's longevity.
I love that idea. It's like solving a delicious puzzle. And maybe some of our listeners have already started working on that puzzle themselves. Have you found any hidden gem Merlots out there? Have you tried aging one and been surprised by the results? Share your stories with us. We're all in this together, everyone.
It's really fascinating how much a wine's origin story can tell us about its potential. Speaking of origins, you mentioned Merlot's big jump in popularity. What were some of the reasons behind that?
It is interesting how a grape's reputation can change so much. I remember hearing about Merlot having a bit of a dip in popularity too. What was that all about?
Yeah, Merlot's journey hasn't always been smooth sailing. It had a boom in the 90s, but then faced a decline. Pop culture actually played a role in that, believe it or not.
I think I know what you mean. Wasn't there a movie that kind of gave Merlot a bad rap?
You've got a good memory. We won't name any names, but let's just say a certain film might have made Merlot seem a little less cool for a while. Luckily, the wine world has moved on from that.
It's a good reminder to trust our own taste buds and not just follow trends. But let's go back to that boom period, what made Merlot so popular in the first place.
One big reason was its approachability. Merlot is known for being smooth, fruity, and having those soft tannins. It's easy to enjoy, even for people who are new to red wines.
So it was like a gateway red, something that could ease people into bolder flavors.
Exactly. It was a nice bridge between lighter reds like Pinot Noir and the more powerful ones like Cabernet Sauvignon.
Makes perfect sense. It's that Goldilocks grape again, not too light, not too heavy. But then what happened? Why the sudden decline?
A few things contributed. Some say the massive planting of Merlot in the 90s actually led to a dip in quality. Producers focused on quantity rather than finesse.
So it became a victim of its own success. Too much Merlot, not enough quality control.
Unfortunately, that's a pretty common story in the wine world. When something gets trendy, everyone jumps on the bandwagon, and quality can suffer. But the good news is, Merlot is making a comeback.
It sounds like it's finally getting the recognition it deserves. But Merlot's story goes way back, even before this whole boom and bust cycle. Where did it all begin?
Like a lot of our favorite grapes, Merlot comes from Vitis vinifera, the species that gives us most of the world's wine.
Vitis vinifera, check. But there are so many different grapes within that species. Where does Merlot fit in?
DNA analysis has actually uncovered a pretty cool family connection. Merlot is believed to be a descendant of Cabernet Franc, which means it's a sibling to Cabernet Sauvignon and Carménère.
Hold on. Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot are siblings. And Carménère is in the mix, too. That's wild. Like a family reunion in my wine glass.
Pretty amazing, right? It adds a whole new layer to appreciating these wines.
For sure. I'm wondering if Merlot inherited some of its best qualities from its famous siblings, maybe the aging potential or those complex flavors.
It's definitely possible. Genetics can play a big role in a grape's characteristics, but we also have to consider the environment, the climate, the soil, everything that makes up what we call terroir in the wine world.
Terroir. I hear that word all the time, but I'm not sure I totally get it. What does it really mean?
Think of terroir as the whole package of environmental factors that shape a wine's personality. Climate, soil, altitude, even things like nearby bodies of water. It all plays a part.
So it's like the grape's sense of place, the environment it grows up in.
Exactly. And just like human siblings raised in different environments can turn out very different, grapes grown in different terroirs can express themselves in unique ways, even if they're the same variety.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not just nature or nurture, it's both. It's about the interplay between the grape and its environment.
Exactly. And that's why exploring different wine regions is so fascinating. Every region offers a different perspective on a particular grape. So, back to Merlot. We know it's grown all over the world now, but was it always so widespread? Where did it come from originally?
I'm guessing France.
You got it. Most signs point to southwestern France as Merlot's likely birthplace.
Figures. So many of our favorite grapes seem to have roots in France.
France does have a very long history with winemaking, and Merlot is a part of that legacy. Over the centuries, it's traveled from its French home to vineyards all around the world.
It's quite the traveler. What helped it become so successful globally?
One big reason is its adaptability. Merlot is a tough grape. It can handle a range of climates and soil types. It's happy growing in lots of different places.
Like the adventurous type, always up for a new terroir. But being adaptable isn't the only reason it's so popular. What else makes it so appealing?
Its versatility is another big draw. Merlot can make so many different styles of wine, from easy drinking, fruity wines meant for young enjoyment, to complex, age-worthy wines that get better with time.
It's like the multi-talented member of the Cru family. So it's good for winemakers who want to experiment and for drinkers who are looking for something to suit any mood or occasion.
That's a great way to put it. But we've been focusing on the positives. Are there any challenges or misconceptions about Merlot that we should talk about?
That's a fair point. Every grape has its quirks, right?
One thing with Merlot is getting it to ripen properly. It buds early in the season, which means it can be hit by those late spring frosts.
Ah, so it's a bit sensitive early on.
Exactly. If the grapes don't get enough sun and warmth, the wine can end up lacking that richness and complexity that Merlot is known for.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? Takes skill to get it just right.
It's a testament to the winemakers who work so hard to make it happen. You also mentioned misconceptions earlier. What are some of the common myths about Merlot that need busting?
Well, like we've talked about, there's that idea that all Merlots are light-bodied and should be drunk young. We know that's not true. I've also heard people say that Merlot's always blended with other grapes. Is that right?
While Merlot is a team player in blends, especially in Bordeaux, it can definitely stand on its own. There are plenty of places that make fantastic 100% Merlot wines.
So you can really get the pure Merlot experience. That opens up even more tasting possibilities. As we've been talking about Merlot, I keep thinking back to our Cabernet Sauvignon deep dive.
I thought you might make that connection. It's really interesting to compare these two big names in red wine. They're often mentioned together, but they each have their own distinct personality.
For those of us who are still getting acquainted with Merlot, how would you say it differs from its sibling, Cabernet Sauvignon?
One of the most obvious differences is in the tannins. Merlot tends to have softer, smoother tannins than Cabernet Sauvignon, which can be a bit more grippy, especially when it's young.
So if I'm in the mood for something smoother and more velvety, Merlot is the way to go.
Absolutely. And those softer tannins mean Merlot is often ready to drink sooner. It doesn't need years of aging to mellow out like some Cabernet Sauvignons do.
That's good news for impatient wine lovers like me. What about the flavor profiles? How do they compare in terms of aromas and taste?
Merlot leans more towards those red fruit flavors. Think juicy plums and ripe cherries. Cabernet Sauvignon, on the other hand, often shows more of those black fruit notes like blackcurrant and cassie.
Okay, I'm starting to get the picture. If Cabernet Sauvignon is the bold, structured sibling, Merlot is the more approachable one, ready to enjoy right away with those lovely red fruit flavors.
That's a great way to think about it. But of course, there are always exceptions. You can find Merlots with great structure and aging potential, just as you can find Cabernet Sauvignons that are surprisingly smooth and fruity.
It's all about those variations. That's what makes exploring wine so much fun.
Yeah.
But are there times when you'd recommend one over the other? Like if someone's having steak, would you always point them to Cabernet Sauvignon?
Not necessarily. While Cabernet Sauvignon's bolder tannins might seem like a natural match for steak, a well-structured Merlot can be fantastic with red meat too.
So it's more about finding the right wine for the dish and not being afraid to experiment a little.
Exactly. It's all about personal preference and finding that perfect harmony between the food and the wine. Speaking of siblings, we haven't talked much about Carménère, remember? Part of that Cabernet Merlot family.
Oh, right. Carménère, the forgotten sibling. What's its story? How does it compare to its more famous siblings?
Carménère is a bit of a mystery, actually. It's originally from Bordeaux, but almost completely disappeared from France in the late 1800s. There was a massive outbreak of phylloxera. You remember that tiny but destructive louse?
Phylloxera, that's the one that almost wiped out European vineyards, right?
That's the one.
Yeah.
So some Carménère vines had been shipped to Chile before the phylloxera epidemic reached South America.
So Chile became its refuge. That's lucky for Carménère.
It was. And For many years, Chilean winemakers actually thought Carmenere was Merlot.
Wait, what? How is that even possible?
Well, they look and smell pretty similar, and since nobody in Chile really knew about Carmenere at the time, the confusion lasted for quite a while.
It's like Carmenere was hiding in plain sight.
It wasn't until the 1990s that DNA testing revealed its true identity.
Wow. So is Carmenere making a comeback in France now that everyone knows what it is?
There have been some attempts to bring it back to Bordeaux, but it's still pretty rare there. Chile, on the other hand, has really embraced Carmenere. It's become one of their signature grapes.
It's like Carmenere found its true home in Chile. But what does it taste like? How does it compare to Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon?
Carmenere is known for its dark fruit flavors, often with notes of blackberry, plum, and get this, a hint of green peppercorn.
Green peppercorn? That's interesting.
It is. It's one of those things that sets Carmenere apart from its siblings.
I'm starting to see the family dynamics. Merlot is smooth and approachable. Cabernet Sauvignon is bold and structured. And Carmenere brings a touch of mystery and spice to the mix.
That's a great way to sum it up. Can Carmenere age as well as its siblings, though?
That's what I'm wondering.
That's a great question. We're still learning about Carmenere's full potential, but some have shown remarkable aging ability, developing those leathery, tobacco-y, spicy notes as they mature.
Leather, tobacco, spice. That sounds pretty sophisticated.
It is. But remember, Carmenere is a new rediscovery in the wine world. We're still figuring out all its secrets, which makes it all the more exciting. But let's get practical for a moment. We talked about Merlot being versatile with food, but any specific recommendations? If I'm having a dish with really strong flavors, what kind of Merlot should I look for?
That's a great question. You can't just pair any Merlot with any dish, right?
Exactly. That's where knowing about regional styles comes in handy. For those bolder dishes, I'd say try a Merlot from a warmer climate, like Napa Valley in California.
Napa Valley? Why Napa?
Napa Valley Merlots are known for being ripe and full-bodied, often with higher alcohol and more intense fruit flavors.
So they can stand up to those big flavors without getting lost in the mix.
Exactly. They bring a boldness to the table that can complement those stronger dishes. What if you're having something lighter, though, like grilled fish or a salad?
Ah, good point. A big, bold Merlot might be too much for those delicate flavors.
You're right. For lighter dishes, I'd go with a Merlot from a cooler climate, like Washington State or Chile.
And what makes those regions a better fit for lighter food?
Cooler climates tend to produce Merlots that are more restrained in their fruitiness, with brighter acidity and softer tannins. It makes for a more refreshing, delicate experience.
So it enhances the subtle flavors of the dish without overwhelming them.
You got it. It's all about balance, remember. But what about those in-between dishes, like something with earthy flavors? Roasted root vegetables, maybe, or a mushroom risotto?
That's a good one. Where do you go with that?
I'd look for a Merlot from a region with volcanic soils, like Tuscany in Italy or some parts of Chile.
Volcanic soils. What's special about those?
Volcanic soils tend to give the wines this unique minerality and subtle earthy notes, which pair beautifully with those earthy dishes.
Wow, so the soil itself is adding to the flavor. It's amazing how much goes into making a bottle of wine.
It's a true collaboration between nature and human skill.
This whole deep dive is making me appreciate the art of winemaking so much more. It's not just about grapes and fermentation. It's about understanding the land, the climate, all those subtle details that create a unique wine.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a never-ending journey of learning and discovery.
Speaking of discovery, I'm feeling a little adventurous. What if we stepped outside the world of Vitis vinifera for a bit? Explore some other grape species.
Now you're talking. There's a whole universe of grapes beyond Vitis vinifera, each with its own story and flavor to uncover.
Okay, I'm ready to explore. Lead the way. So we've been exploring the familiar world of wine, and now it's time to venture into uncharted territory. I'm excited to discover these lesser-known grapes. Where should we start our adventure?
If we're going beyond Vitis vinifera, we have to head to North America. That's where you'll find a unique group of grapes called Muscadinia.
Muscadinia, that's a new one for me.
Yeah.
How are they different from the Vitis vinifera grapes we've been talking about?
One big difference is that they're naturally resistant to certain diseases that affect Vitis vinifera. Remember phylloxera, right?
Oh, yeah. That tiny louse that caused so much trouble for European vineyards. So are you saying these Muscadinia grapes weren't affected by that?
That's right. Muscadinia species have a natural defense against phylloxera, which made them super valuable to grape breeders after that whole epidemic.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Did European winemakers use Muscadinia grapes to rebuild their vineyards then?
Not really. While Muscadinia grapes have some great qualities, like that disease resistance, they also have a unique flavor that's often described as foxy, not everyone's cup of tea.
Foxy. Okay, now I'm really curious. What does that even mean in terms of wine?
It's a specific kind of aroma that you find in some Native American grapes. It's a little hard to describe, but imagine a mix of strawberry banana and a slightly earthy note.
That's definitely different. I can see why it might not be for everyone.
Mm.
But you said these Muscadinia grapes were valuable for breeding. How so?
Breeders saw a chance to combine the best of both worlds. They crossed Muscadinia species, especially Vitis rotundifolia, with Vitis vinifera varieties.
The kind of great matchmaking. So they created these hybrid grapes that had the disease resistance, but hopefully a more appealing flavor. Are any of those hybrid grapes popular today?
Absolutely. Quite a few hybrids have become known for their quality and adaptability, especially in regions with tough climates. One example is Schomburgken, a red hybrid that can handle cold weather and makes wines with black cherry, spice, and earthy notes.
Schomburgken. I'll have to look out for that one. Seems like a good choice for colder climates where Vitis vinifera struggles. But are there other lesser-known grapes besides hybrids that are gaining popularity?
Oh, there are always new discoveries in the wine world. One trend that's getting bigger is the revival of ancient grape varieties.
Ancient grapes. Now that's interesting. Tell me more.
For centuries, so many grapes were kind of forgotten about. The international varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot took center stage. But now, winemakers are going back to their roots, looking to revive these ancient grapes and bring back some diversity and unique flavors.
That's awesome. It's like giving those forgotten grapes a second chance. Any examples of these rediscovered gems?
One cool example is Orchidsitelli, an ancient white grape from the country of Georgia. It's known for its high acidity and aromas of green apple, citrus, and beeswax.
Orchidsitelli from Georgia. That's going on my to-try list. This whole exploration of lesser-known grapes has been amazing. But as we wrap up this Merlot deep dive, I want to bring it back to our star grape. We've covered so much its history, where it's grown, its family ties, even its more distant relatives. So at the end of the day, what makes Merlot so special? Why should we, as wine lovers, seek it out and enjoy it?
That's the perfect question to end on. What makes a grape worthy of our attention?
Exactly. Why Merlot?
For me, Merlot's magic is in its balance. It's got this beautiful harmony of fruit, acidity, and tannins. It's not as bold as Cabernet Sauvignon or as delicate as Pinot Noir. It's somewhere in between, a symphony of flavors that are both enjoyable and intriguing.
Balance, that's a great word to describe Merlot, like a graceful dance on your palate.
And that balance makes it so versatile. It's great young, full of fresh fruit, but it can also age beautifully, developing those complex flavors over time. It's a wine for any occasion, from casual dinners to fancy celebrations.
The perfect all-rounder, then.
You could say that.
Yeah.
But it can also surprise you. A really well-made Merlot from a special place can be a real eye-opener. It shows you the grape's true potential and the skill of the winemaker.
It sounds like Merlot is full of hidden depths, a grape that's just waiting to be discovered and appreciated.
Exactly. And that's what I love about exploring wine. There's always something new to learn, new flavors to experience, new wines to fall in love with.
This deep dive has given me a whole new appreciation for Merlot. It's a grape with such a rich history, global appeal, and so much potential. Maybe this will inspire some of our listeners to go on their own wine adventures, try new things, and expand their palates.
I hope so. The world of wine is vast and exciting. There's an adventure waiting around every corner. So to all our listeners, cheers to the joy of discovery.
Cheers to that. Thanks for joining us on this Merlot journey. Until next time, happy exploring.